top of the afternoon to you, everybody. Stan Turner with you here. Happy to be with you this Saturday. Little gray side, but boy, I'll tell you, the folks are all over the place down here in the St. Croix Valley. Weddings on top of weddings on top of weddings. You can't get a room. You can't get a parking. Well, you can't get a parking place. You have to drive around a little bit. But wow, things are happening here and around the area. Boy, well, boy, look who's with me here. My Monday through Friday partner, Tom Shubidoo here, putting aside most of the music for the moment, just so we can have a nice visit today. How you doing, kiddo?
Not too bad, sir. Always good to be here.
Always nice to have you. Yes, we do our six-day week work week here, don't we?
And we do.
Like it because we have fun. We do indeed. You know, I noticed something. I guess it shouldn't surprise me or shock me. But let's see. Here we are, middle of August, and it was a couple of weeks ago. So early August, I noticed in a couple of shops, they've already got their Halloween decorations out.
No, they don't.
Yes, they do.
You're lying to me.
I am not lying. I do not lie. I do a lot of things wrong, but I don't lie. And so they do have that out. And also, the other day, maybe about a week ago, I went into a used bookshop, and they had their Christmas and holiday greeting cards out already. Stacks of them. I mean, stacks of them.
I was really worried you were going to say
that. This is middle of August, folks. And you know what? Why don't we just jump to the chocolate bunnies and get on with Easter? What do you say about that, huh? Why wait? Isn't that getting to be kind of wacky?
It's a little bit of a creep.
It is. Good way to put it there, my friend. Well, folks, it's 12:07 right now. You heard the man. We're at 72 degrees in the Twin Cities. And, oh, quite a scene in Memphis last night. They were holding flickering candles. The fans of Elvis Presley made a slow nighttime walk past his gravesite at Graceland, marking the anniversary of his death, do you believe it? 37 years ago. Fans were strolling quietly through the Meditation Garden at Graceland, that, of course, Presley's longtime Memphis home. Presley's grave is in that garden. The scene is repeated each year on the anniversary of the death of the King of Rock and Roll. Elvis Presley died at age 42 on this date, August 16th, 1977. He died of a heart attack, shocking and saddening his fans worldwide, who remember.
Memories pass between the pages of my mind. Memories sweeten through the ages just like wine.
Last night's vigil is a highlight of Elvis Week, an annual celebration of Elvis's career and his life. This year, other Elvis Week events have included an auction of an authenticated Presley artifact, which happens to be a 1977 Cadillac Seville used by Elvis himself, and the groundbreaking of a planned 450-room hotel at the Graceland tourist attraction area. So there you are. We remember Elvis on this, the 37th anniversary of his passing. Hard to believe, huh? 37 years ago. My. Well, let's carry on with the business at hand here. How about small towns? Many of you grew up in a small town. Most of us, of course, pass through them as we travel across the state and the country. Some small towns are really small. Such tiny places are often the butt of jokes, aren't they? You've heard them. That town is so small that at night two lights are a car and one light is the town. Or the road sign that welcomes you to a small town is the same one that thanks you for visiting. Welcome and come again, both on the same sign. That's small. And this tiny town is so remote that although it's not the end of the world, you can see it from there. All right, you get the idea. Well, jokes aside, there is much good and interesting and important about small towns, and you can find all of that and more between the covers of a recently published book. It's a beauty, too. It's called Little Minnesota, a nostalgic look at Minnesota's smallest towns. It covers, in words and pictures, 100 Minnesota towns with populations of 100 people or less. We're talking small here, folks. The folks who put it together are with me in studio this noon to kind of walk us through some of these mini Minnesota places which are found at all points of the compass across the state. Jill and Dean Johnson, welcome to you both. Thanks for coming down all the way
Our
from
pleasure.
Park Rapids, Dean.
Yes.
Huh?
Yeah. Thanks for having us.
You are
Beautiful
welcome.
Trip.
Yeah. It was okay? Everything okay?
It was a good trip.
What's the driving time from Park Rapids to here?
4 hours.
Four hours. Great scenery.
This is the deep south for us, you realize.
Well, you were probably on Interstate 94, so you missed a lot of the small towns, didn't you?
We did.
It used to be before the freeway system, you had to go through those small towns, didn't you?
Yes.
People knew more about them. But congratulations on a wonderful book.
Thank you, Dean. You
shot the photographs here, and they're absolutely fantastic.
And thank you.
And Jill, you did the text. My goodness, lady. How long did it take you? This is fantastic. I'm a history buff and been a journalist for a long time, and I'm just absolutely taken by the amount of work and detail that you have put into this thing.
It took me 4 years to travel around the state and visit every town, talk to people, dig up history books, centennial books, and put it together. And every time I talk to somebody about the book, I get the same two questions.
Yeah,
whatever made you want to write about Minnesota's smallest towns?
All right, okay.
And why isn't my town in the book?
All right. Let's start with the first one first, okay? Whatever possessed you to write a book about Minnesota's teeny tiny itsy-bitsy towns?
Well, back in 1956, my dad got his first teaching job in Strandquist, Minnesota, which is a small Polish-Swedish community in northwestern Minnesota.
Okay.
And 50 years later, he returned to Strandquist for a class reunion for the very first class that he taught.
Mm-hmm.
And when he came home, his comment to me was, gee, honey, I think in 10 years, all these little towns will be gone. Everything I remember has disappeared.
Wow.
And so Dean and I decided to take off across the state of Minnesota and look at our 100 smallest towns and see, would they be gone the next census?
Catalog them and photograph them before they're gone. But do you have any good news for us? Are these going to be around, a lot of these towns?
You know,
or are we looking at the demise?
We were pleasantly surprised. I wrote the book, Dean took the pictures before the 2010 census came out. And surprisingly, 15 of the towns went over 100.
Really? With the new census, they actually grew.
They grew, which really took us by surprise. The only thing that we're thinking is that the towns that were closer to a bigger city grew because the housing was so much cheaper and people were willing to drive 15, 20 miles to St. Cloud or whatever to work. It's
kind of threw the publisher off, though, because it was supposed to be Little Minnesota, 100 towns under 100.
Uh-huh.
And so they had to change the title.
To around 100. Had to fudge that a little bit.
Yeah.
Okay, so the impetus for the book, the number one question you get, why, what possessed you to write the book? So Daddy kind of got you thinking about this.
He really did.
And then
why isn't my town in the book?
Yeah.
We set the parameters that the town had to be incorporated. So they had to have a mayor and a council. Otherwise, I really don't know where we would have stopped. It would have been every little hamlet, you know, around every corner.
Yeah. So no matter how small the town, they're legally called cities if they're incorporated. Right.
And so as we were writing the book, another thing that happened that really surprised us is one of the towns voted 2-1 to dissolve. Tenney voted 2-1 to dissolve, and so they're in the book because they were already in the book when they voted. But as soon as they dissolved, then Funkley, population 5, became the smallest city in Minnesota, and they have a mayor and a council. So if you're standing up and breathing in Funkley, you are on the council.
That is a shame if they go away.
That is the best name I have ever heard for a town.
Funkley? Isn't that great?
It's right up there with Haynesville.
L-E-Y. Where is it located? We got to know because I think a lot of people right now are going to drop whatever they're doing and drive to Funkley.
It's 30 miles north of Bemidji.
All right.
And they have probably one of the best stories in the whole book.
They do. Why don't you go ahead and tell us?
Okay.
By the way, once again, Funkley, way up in northern Minnesota, population five has been in a contest, in a way, for the smallest town with Tenney, population five. But Funkley is winning by default because Tenney has voted to go out of existence.
2-1.
Tenney is out in extreme western Minnesota. Soon it'll be extreme obscurity, won't it?
Absolutely.
Okay. The great story about Funkley.
Funkley is an old logging community, and back in 1953, the entire town boarded a plane for New York City.
The whole town?
38 people.
Oh, it was big then.
On an airplane. They won a contest by rolling the most bandages for the American Cancer Society. Apparently, they had recycled old sheets into bandages and won this trip to New York City. So they flew to New York on the Fight Cancer Funkley special. And while there, they met dignitaries. They were on television.
This is during the
Eisenhower
years, isn't it?
Absolutely.
Yeah.
And then after spending time in New York City, they flew to Washington, D.C., where Governor Elmer Anderson introduced them to President Dwight Eisenhower.
They did meet the president.
Sadly,
all the Funkleyites.
Yeah. Sadly, the mayor, the 78-year-old mayor, could not meet the president because he slipped in the tub and cracked two ribs.
No!
Came home on a stretcher.
Wow.
Yeah.
Ugly quirk of fate.
That was terrible. Very unfortunate.
One of the Funkley's top person actually took a tumble, flubbed in the tub, you might
say. Flubbed in the tub.
And, so all 38 Funkleyites were out of town. It must have been a burglar's holiday back
No. No. The Minnesota State Patrol did leave somebody in town, plus two men stayed behind. They refused to go. One said his feet were on the bum, and the other one said he'd already been to New York City and it was just a bunch of concrete.
That may be the most apt description of New York City we've ever heard.
There is a bar in Funkley, and Dean and my dad actually visited the bar. I did not, so I can't say I've been.
Dean, take us inside the Funkley bar.
Why do you keep going back for pictures all the time to Funkley?
Because of the bar,
It's a cute little bar. They've got a couch on the front, and the day we were there, there was a lab stretched out on the couch.
My God.
Inside the bar, we went in at happy hour. We had to shake dice with the bartender to see how much we had to pay for the drink. And she kept losing, so we ended up paying 50 cents.
Dean, it's the day, Dean, you drank Funkley Dry. Would that be about right?
No, to the extent possible, yes. Well,
you know, Dean,
didn't need much.
This is such a fascinating, folks, you're going to love this book. We're talking to Jill and Dean Johnson. They put together a book called Little Minnesota, a nostalgic look at Minnesota's smallest towns. From Funkley and Tenney, population 5, all the way up to about 100, huh? And lots in between. This is a great... Dean, I was thinking, you're the photographer. Most of these places, you could stand in one spot and photograph the entire town without moving. Would that be about right?
There was a couple towns where... Yep.
You
had to pick your spot. I had to keep going around the town to get different angles of the same building.
It's a wonderful town. Great stories to tell. And we're going to continue with Jill and Dean Johnson and their book. We're going to learn some fascinating things about. We're thinking big about small towns today because there really are some great stories here. Stay with us. Stan Turner here, Tom over there. We'll be back with Funkley, Minnesota, and other of our mini burgs right after this. The Stan Turner Show, we love good stories, and there's no better place to find them than Valley Bookseller in downtown Stillwater. Valley Bookseller is an independent bookstore with knowledgeable and friendly staff who love books. Tell them what you like to read, and they'll make terrific recommendations just for you. Also, discover one of the finest children's collections in the entire Twin Cities. Valley Bookseller, great books, great people. 217 North Main in Stillwater. Online at valleybookseller.com.
The 1920s were a golden age for baseball and custom-tailored clothing. That golden age is back at Jaime's Haberdashery in St. Paul. Jaime's Haberdashery helps men look and feel their best with high-quality clothing cut and styled just for them. Make each visit uniquely yours with hats, suits, casual wear, and accessories. visit their barbershop for a hot lather shave. It's the golden age again at Jaime's Haberdashery, 400 St. Peter Street in downtown St. Paul. Online at Jaime's.com.
Find out why more people come here to River Valley Ford.
You're going to love the lineup of fuel-efficient vehicles at River Valley Ford in Baldwin. Choose the impeccable design of the Ford Fusion. Get up to 34 miles per gallon and look great doing it. The Ford Focus gives you up to 36 miles per gallon, and you'll see 38 MPGs from the Ford Fiesta. Go further for less. We'll help you get there. Shop, compare, and find out why so many of your friends and neighbors choose River Valley Ford in Baldwin.
Pain. It stops us from living the life we want to live. At Health Source of Stillwater, Dr. Matthew Fiebelkorn not only wants to stop the pain, but find its true source. Headaches? The cause may be in the neck. Numbness in your feet? It may be due to sciatica from an old injury.
Hello, this is Dr. Matt with Health Source Chiropractic of Stillwater. We'll perform a thorough chiropractic consultation, talking about your health history, your health concerns, an exam, and if needed, x-rays.
Health Source of Stillwater. Do you Health Source?
Back, and we're taking you on a virtual tour of mini Minnesota, little teeny towns around the state here. Compliments of Jill and Dean Johnson. They have put together a wonderful book. If you're looking for it, well, just for some plain fun reading, but for some gift ideas, Little Minnesota, a nostalgic look at Minnesota's smallest towns. That's the book to grab. It's modestly priced too, Jill. It's, my goodness, $17, $16.95.
It's a good gift.
And we just heard from our wonderful sponsor, Valley Bookseller here in Stillwater, and come 3 o'clock this afternoon, where are you two going to be?
We will be there.
You will be at Valley Bookseller, and you'll be able to visit with folks. Come on down, folks. Meet the Johnsons. They are fantastic. They put together an excellent book, and they're so accessible, so fun, just brimming with stories. They probably have stories outside the confines of the book, too. You can't get everything in the book, but you've done a masterly job of squeezing so many great stories. We maybe will learn more about our own state of Minnesota through this book, looking at the small towns than we might at the so-called bigger cities around here.
You know, absolutely. The entire history of Minnesota is pretty much reflected through the little Minnesota towns. And, you know, I think, although my roots are in Strandquist, Dean's dad grew up in Viking, mm-hmm. which is in the northwestern corner of the state, mm-hmm. also mm-hmm. in Marshall County. Mm-hmm. And Viking is a railroad town, yeah. like 88 of the 100 towns in Little Minnesota. Most of them grew up as a result of the railroad. Viking, it's interesting how the towns are named. And Viking was named by Hans Hansen, who was the Norwegian pastor time. No kidding.
Hans Hansen
named the town Viking. But the railroad workers had a different name for Viking. They called it the Lord's City because you could not purchase a drop of liquor anywhere around Viking. And like
dry, how about Dry Gulch? That would have worked too.
That would have worked too.
Okay.
And like so many towns at that time, they had a Norwegian church and a Swedish church.
Let me guess. Lutheran, would that be?
Yeah,
right.
Norwegian Lutheran.
Norwegian Lutheran, yes. Of course.
And Swedish Mission Covenant.
Okay.
My dad grew up in the Swedish Mission Covenant Church. And his only regret about that was they would not let him dance the Scottish.
All right, Viking. Known for, among other things, Bachelor Capital of Minnesota. Is that right? Tell us about that.
In 1948, Viking caught the eye of Minneapolis Trib writer Evelyn Burke, who found out that the men outnumbered the women 100-1 in Viking. If you counted all the men in the outlying farms, there were a lot of men and very few women.
A ladies' paradise.
Absolutely. Yeah. So one of the pastors formed a bachelor's club, and he worked hard to teach the young men social graces and niceties to try to attract dates and get women. Well, obviously, it worked because the town is still there,
yes,
you know, so
yes,
something happened.
Take that weed out of your mouth and clean up those bib overalls, something like that.
While we were there, while we visited Viking, we visited the graves of Dean's grandparents who are buried there, and a beautiful little cemetery donated on a land of gorgeous farmland. And we noticed that there was one grave that was unmarked. So I asked around and found out the story that many years ago when the town was first formed and the train was coming through, a man fell off the train at night.
Oh, dear.
But he could only speak English, no Swedish or Norwegian.
Oh.
So when Matthias Tostrup and his wife picked him up in their buggy, he died on the way to their house, and they never found out who he was.
Oh, let me get this straight. A man in America falls off a train, speaks English,
cannot
make himself understood because he's in a Scandinavian colony.
They had absolutely no idea what he was saying.
And maybe he died as a result of lack of communication.
I think so.
Wasn't that? Well, we don't want to laugh too much. That's pretty tragic, but still, it's bizarre, isn't it? This is amazing, amazing. You know, your book covers literally A to Z small towns, everything from Aldrich to Zempel, Minnesota,
right,
and everything in between. Before we plunge ahead and walk through some more of these little tiny towns, what do they have in common? What did they have in common? We talked about railroads. That was really the linchpin, wasn't it, for many
towns
getting started at all?
Right. James Hill had to figure out a way to transport his wheat to Minneapolis, St. Paul, and to Winnipeg, Canada, and so he needed to have a railroad. And typically, towns would form 7 miles apart on the railroad because that's about how far a farmer could travel in a day with his wagon full of feed or grain and return home again.
We're talking back in the late 1800s and
early
1900s.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. What else? Railroads for sure. A town has to have a couple of retail operations. A post office for sure.
Post offices were big, and often the post office was the first thing after the depot that formed in a city.
It wasn't the bar.
Well, actually,
it depends on the town. I don't think it was far behind in Funkley.
We talk about the Holy Trinity in Little Minnesota, and what we're really talking about is the church,
yes,
the bar, and the baseball field.
The Holy Trinity, folks. Gives
absolutely
us a whole new meaning, doesn't it?
And we found that in every one of these small towns, they all had a beautiful church, or two, or three, and a bar, and sometimes
two bars.
And at least one baseball field, and sometimes two beautiful baseball fields.
Wow, amazing. Well, they had their priorities straight, didn't they?
They did.
And this sustained the towns for a long time. When did small towns start getting into trouble? That is, fighting for their very survival.
Go ahead.
Well, I think when the railroad business declined a bit, and you saw more highways going through the state, the automobile showed up in the 20s.
And the interstate blew right by them.
Yeah. So you would get bigger towns that were in the intersection of the highways, and the ones in between, like between Granite Falls and Appleton, there's a couple tiny towns, and those towns would just wither and decrease as the ones on the intersections grew.
Do we know how many small towns have vanished, say, since about 1900 or so? Is there any way of knowing?
You know, I'm not sure. There's many lost towns. I don't have the exact number, but I know there's many that have not survived.
A lot of them. Okay.
Yeah.
Let's get through some of these small towns in your book here, okay? Mm-hmm. Once again, these are towns, folks, that are incorporated. That is, they have a formal, lawful government there, right? So they can elect mayors and council. They're also eligible for, they can levy taxes, and they can receive government aid, that sort of thing.
Initially, when a town would form, one of the top reasons that they wanted to incorporate was to get the liquor license, because they did not want to have an illegal
liquor
establishment. And so often the town would have to get the blessing of the local priest, and that often would sway the town leaders to approve incorporation, so they could get that.
And you might
license.
Want to drop a bottle of wine around Christmas off to the to the church.
Absolutely.
Well, okay. Let's start with Aldrich, the first town in your your book here. Mm-hmm. Let's see. At last count, about 48 souls lived
48
there.
48 people.
It's almost north central Minnesota.
Right. Another railroad town.
Okay.
But they really became quite famous for the Aldrich Cheese Shop, which operated for many years, and
one of
their most famous customers, of course, was General Jack Vesey, who would often stop there to buy cheese. And one year, he actually purchased 32 pounds of cheese for all the NATO heads of staff.
Wow, he was chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff. You don't get any higher in the military, in the American military, than that.
That's...
We've had the general on this show, as a matter of fact, and I've had the pleasure of getting to know him. What a great guy. So he stopped in Little Aldridge, population 48 or less,
he
or fewer, and bought a lot of cheese and sent it off to his contemporaries, or his counterparts, I should say, in NATO. Huh?
So everybody in NATO had Aldridge cheese that year.
What's this about Aldridge and shots fired, extortion and tragedy on the prairie?
Well,
do we remember anything about that?
Well, there was a conflict there between the Ojibwe and the white settlers, and one of the employees for the railroad company store lived in a log house in Aldridge and had been stealing from the local Indians for quite a while. And they had pretty much had enough of that. Mm-hmm. And so...
It was a pattern that they had to deal with, you know, forever since the Europeans.
All right. So they, meaning the Native Americans.
The Native Americans.
So they said enough is enough is enough.
And they got into a skirmish, and shots were fired, and somebody died, and soldiers were brought in, they somehow resolved it on their own without...
In the smallest of towns.
Even in the
big
smallest
skirmishes,
of towns.
Let's pop over to Bijou, how it's pronounced? Again, up in kind of northwestern Minnesota.
Right.
Population 89, incorporated, fairly recently, 1971. Bijou, my goodness, nice little town on the prairie, but they had some devastating weather.
You know, so many of these little towns have gone through, almost all of them, burned at one time. You know, Main Street would burn before they had a fire department. But many of them suffered through tornadoes. And in July of 1978, a tornado hit Bijou and took out the school and the church and several homes, lifted the railroad cars off the tracks.
And left the wheels on the tracks.
But I think it's interesting that after that tornado, from now on, Bijou has had a tornado queen every year over the 4th of July.
They pick a tornado queen.
They pick a tornado queen, which I dare you to find that anywhere else in the U.S. of A.
I'd call her a twister sister. would that work? Huh? Maybe we could go that route. But okay, making, I guess, fun out of adversity, in Bijou, Minnesota. What else? Where else do you want to talk about?
Beltrami. You know, we visited Beltrami, which also is in the northern part of the state. We really enjoyed visiting there. We happened to run into a group of men that were having coffee at the Beltrami Cafe.
They were telling stories about the old parades.
The old parades.
The old parades. And, the recent parades. And they had so few people that there was only one guy to watch the parade. So the parade would go by. He would move his lawn chair down to the next block. And he'd watch it go by again.
we may be the victim of a little joke here, but maybe not.
I think he was telling the truth.
I think he was.
How many people were in the parade?
Half a dozen.
Really?
Yeah.
So the people in the parade outnumbered the spectator. Yeah.
And the parade kind of got disorganized because one of the tractors overheated. So a guy turned down a side street to water his engine down, and everybody followed him.
Oh, my goodness. We're going to work our way across the state here. And, we'll get out of northern Minnesota, but first we have another one here. A town named Bena, B-E-N-A. Look at that. It's actually broken 100 in the population sweepstakes.
It has. It's one of the towns that went over 100 and made us change the name of the book.
A thriving metropolis for sure, but this has an interesting piece of history because Bena was one of about 10 locations around Minnesota during World War II where German prisoners of war were billeted, kept. These were not what you would call maximum security institutions.
No.
The Krauts could walk right out of there if they wanted to, and it happened here, didn't it?
It did. They're one of the few POW camps that actually had an attempted escape. One night, two of the young German prisoners decided that they would sneak out and try to make their way down to the Gulf of Mexico and make a run for home.
Wow.
Well, they were discovered on a lake in Grand Rapids in the middle of a snowstorm roasting sausages.
As Germans would want to do, yes.
And one of the resort owners that discovered them thought it was very unusual that these two young men who could not speak English were roasting sausages and turned them in.
A dead giveaway, as it were. Huh?
Yes.
And Dean, your photography from Bina shows us what kind of a building is this with a huge fish mouth and these intimidating teeth? It looks like jaws here. What do we have?
That's a big old northern pike. Boy. It's the Big Fish Restaurant, which has been in Bina for a long time.
Tom,
it's still operating.
Right in that fish's mouth and get your food that way. Huh?
Bigger than any northern I've ever caught.
Yeah. You used to be able to walk right into the fish and eat. I think they have a little side building now that's a little spiffier.
Oh, my goodness. Well, let's get to another part of the state. Let's go to southwestern Minnesota. Correll, C-O-R-R-E-L-L.
Yeah.
Correll population, oh, my goodness, look out here. A crush of humanity, 34 souls living in Correll.
It's a town on the move.
It is a town on the move, although it stays still really a lot. And we have here, what, a big bank robbery and a beard-growing contest?
You know, Correll, it was really a fun place to visit, too. The day that we visited, the only place open, of course, was the stock station, gas station, mm-hmm. or not a gas station.
Well,
it was a feed store,
a stock service store.
Mm-hmm. And we said, well, what goes on in here? And he said, well, the farmers come in here every day for coffee and desserts. So it's kind of the hub of the community. Robberies were very common in all these small towns. Several of them had train robberies, bank robberies. It was just kind of a way of life. Correll also has the smallest post office in Minnesota. They only have one active mailbox. And they're open from 9 to 11:18 each morning.
Wait. Till when?
11:18.
Why not 19 or 17?
We don't know. And they have a great basketball story. And we just had talked to some people in Correll about their 1936 championship basketball team. They defeated Appleton 26-23. However, during the halftime, the twin boys, Dean and Dale from Correll switched jerseys in order to confuse the Appleton guards.
How low can you go? I tell you.
Well, the second half, one of the Appleton guards noticed that Dean's eyes were watering, and he knew that it was Dale's eyes that watered. And so he figured it out and protested. And so they had to play the game over again behind closed doors. Correll lost the game and refused to give the trophy back.
Oh my gosh.
They hung on to the trophy, and there's been bad feelings ever since.
Isn't that wonderful? Then they have, of course, a beard judging contest.
They did.
Too.
And they always had fun at their centennials. They did a lot of crazy contests, fun stuff.
Crazy contests, fun stuff. Oh, what else do we have here? Well, let's see. What else do you want to talk about in the way of small towns?
Well, I think we'll go real deep south here
to
Wayland, Minnesota.
Southern accent in southern Minnesota here. Wayland, Minnesota.
This is the real deep south for us. This is south of Rochester.
Mm-hmm. Their crops do have a southern accent.
Do they?
Which
yes,
is another story.
They do.
Okay. Wayland was once known as the tobacco capital of Minnesota.
No tobacco growing up here.
And they still grow tobacco.
Do they really?
Yes.
Yep. Tobacco growing in Minnesota.
Yep.
Well, shut my mouth and call me Leroy. I can't believe it.
Apparently, from 1880 to 1980, almost everybody grew tobacco in Wayland. 5 acres of tobacco would yield the same amount as 25 acres of wheat, so it was very profitable.
Well,
they had a cigar factory in Wayland.
Wayland, Minnesota. Yeah. Why don't we grow tobacco these days in Minnesota, huh?
They grow pie there now.
They have a fabulous pie shop and the Aroma Pie Shop. So when you bicycle through Wayland on the Root River Bicycle Trail, you can stop and have pie at the Aroma Pie Shop.
Well,
wonderful.
A tobacco-flavored pie, maybe.
They also have something that we had never heard of before and that we had a chance to be part of, and that's the Standstill Parade. The third Saturday of every May, they have a parade where the parade stands still, and the spectators do the walking.
Do they walk around the one
you
float?
You walk around the parade, and...
Sounds like our kind of fun, Tom.
Let me tell you...
They go around the block like too much walking to me.
Yeah.
The aging American Legion members are so happy to sit rather than march. And the Lanesboro Beef Queen sits in her parked car and waves to everybody.
The Beef Queen.
The Lanesboro Beef Queen.
Okay.
And the Grand Marshal of the parade, of course, is in a parked car, too.
Of course he is. Of course
waving.
He is.
And
he was in a tractor.
Okay, and the two spectators, they do the walking, they walk
around. Spectators walk around the block.
That's mighty big of them, and that's really nice. Mm-hmm. Isn't this fun? Folks, this is all true. We're not making fun of small towns.
No.
We're not really. We're just giving some of the local color here, because these are wonderful places to be. You know, they don't have a lot of these so-called big city problems that some of us put up with every day. And so there's a lot to be said for residing in these places, and we hope they last for a long time. Let's take a break here. We'll be back as we talk with Jill and Dean Johnson about their wonderful book, Little Minnesota, a nostalgic look at Minnesota's smallest towns.
Best of Woodbury 2014, Best of Woodbury 2012, Best of Woodbury 2010, Best of Woodbury 2000.
Energy Pilates Fitness Yoga, energizing lives. The staff at Energy Pilates has won multiple awards. 4 years as Woodbury Magazine's Best of Winners. 3 years as the Best of the Best Winners. Come to Energy Pilates. Be feeling a little fitter, more energized, and of course, smiling. Energy Pilates Fitness Yoga, energizing lives at energypilatesfitness.com.
The 1920s were a golden age for baseball and custom-tailored clothing. That golden age is back at Jaime's Haberdashery in St. Paul. Jaime's Haberdashery helps men look and feel their best with high-quality clothing cut and styled just for them. Make each visit uniquely yours with hats, suits, casual wear, and accessories. Visit their barber shop for a hot lather shave. It's the golden age again at Jaime's Haberdashery, 400 St. Peter Street in downtown St. Paul. Online at jaimes.com.
Another virus?
Relax. At Computer Repair and Services, every repair costs $99.95 and nothing more. Whether we spend 1 hour or 3 days, repairing your PC is always $99.95. I'm Joe Gillette. Visit Computer Repair and Services at 1441 Stillwater Boulevard or call us at 651-439-7544. It's just $99.95 for every PC repair, excluding hardware. At Computer Repair and Services, you can afford to fix your PC.
At the Stan Turner Show, we love good stories, and there's no better place to find them than Valley Bookseller in downtown Stillwater. Valley Bookseller is an independent bookstore with knowledgeable and friendly staff who love books. Tell them what you like to read, and they'll make terrific recommendations just for you. Also, discover one of the finest children's collections in the entire Twin Cities. Valley Bookseller. Great books, great people. 217 North Main in Stillwater. Online at valleybookseller.com. We're having a ball here this noon, trekking through small town Minnesota. We're doing it thanks to a wonderful book, a new one, recent book by Jill and Dean Johnson. They motored all the way down here from Park Rapids, Minnesota, to talk to you about this wonderful place. And you're going to be 3 o'clock this afternoon. You're going to be in Stillwater at the Valley Bookseller to visit with the folks, sign your book, and just basically talk about the contents of this wonder. What a wonderful story of Minnesota. It really is. It's the other side we don't hear too much about. Towns 100 population or less. I came across a clipping the other day here, I think it's an Associated Press story, about a town that's not in your book. It's a Minnesota town, population 25. Now, normally, you think, why isn't that in the book? Dorset, D-O-R-S-E-T. Well, the reason it's not is because it's not...
not incorporated.
Not incorporated. It doesn't have a government. And the rest.
But they do have a mayor.
I didn't talk about that. Robert Bobby Tufts, T-U-F-T-S, age 5. The mayor of Dorset, age 5.
That is the coolest kid ever.
Isn't that great? He lost his bid for a third term as mayor earlier this month. Instead, voters at the Taste of Dorset Festival threw their support behind a candidate 3 times his age, 16-year-old Eric Mueller. Now, despite losing the office, Bobby held for almost half his life, Bobby accepted his first electoral defeat with grace. He said it was fun, but it's time to pass on the vote. Now, Dorset has a population population of around 25, has no formal government, and its mayoral elections are a decidedly informal affair. Read that spoof. Taste of Dorset festival goers pay a dollar per ballot. They're buying their votes here, a dollar per ballot, and can vote as often as they like. Just about like Chicago.
It's no, like regular politics.
And no different with all the proceeds going to support the festival. Anyway, the torch is passed in Dorset from 5-year-old Bobby to 16-year-old Eric as the new mayor, quote unquote. Isn't that fun?
Oh, it's fun. Yeah.
I hope they get incorporated so you include
me.
Let's talk about Hatfield. Jill and Dean, Hatfield, Minnesota. I cannot believe, first of all, a small little town in southwestern Minnesota. Back in the day, folks, you won't believe the musical organizations, the big name music groups that came through. Tell us about it.
Hatfield has an incredible story. It's a small town located in southwestern Minnesota in Pipestone County.
54 people at last.
54 time. People. And they had the Hollyhock Ballroom. And anybody that lived in that part of the state knows about the Hollyhock. And back in the 40s and the 50s, 60s, and 70s, they had every big group you could possibly have.
Give us the names. This is unbelievable.
They had Neil Sedaka. They had Bobby Vinton, Del Shannon, Fats Domino, Bobby V, the Everly Brothers, Conway Twitty, Lou Christie, the Beach Boys. They had them all. And it was not unusual to have 1,500 to 2,000 people lined up on a Friday and Saturday night to get into the Hollyhock Ballroom.
That's during the early rock years. What about before that, though?
Well, before that, they had Duke Ellington, Tommy Dorsey.
You're serious?
And Guy Lombardo.
These big names came to Hatfield, Minnesota.
To Hatfield, Minnesota.
Duke Ellington. My goodness, Tommy Dorsey, Guy Lombardo. Wow.
Yeah. Sadly, the it's no longer there, the Hollyhock. You know, the days of the ballroom
Jill,
dancing
ended. Jill, why
did
these big groups come to Hatfield, of all places?
Well, you know, in talking to one of the performers, he said that the Hollyhock was a really great place to be. There was a lot of fighting and drinking, and it was just a grand time was had by all.
Those people there. Everybody came there.
It was one of the most popular dance halls of the era.
That's just amazing. This little teeny burg in southwestern Minnesota drawing the biggest names in music, both during the big band era and the early rock era. That is just fantastic. Let's visit a couple more of small towns.
Yeah, you know, we've talked about trains and the importance of trains in little Minnesota towns. But I did find a town where another train stopped that I did not find in any other town. And on July 14th in 1914, the orphan train riders stopped in Tinta, Minnesota.
Tinta, which is?
Tinta is in sort of the central western part of the state.
On the edge of the Red River Valley.
Yeah, almost bordering on the Dakotas. Okay, so the orphan train.
The orphan train stopped, and 2-year-old Carmela Caputo stepped off the train. Prior to her arrival, a priest had visited the Catholic churches in the area to find out if families were interested in adoption. And a family in Tinta was interested, and all of Tinta came out to welcome Carmela. She was one of 250,000 children who left the foundling home in New York City and traveled to the Midwest for either adoption or indentured service.
These were kids who either were not wanted, were wayward, were street waifs, or just invited by their parents or their guardians to get the heck out of town. These little kids. So they were put on, this started back in the 19th century, well into the 20th century, and they were sent west, oftentimes stopping at places like Tinta. And the kids would be put out on the railroad platform, almost like the old slave days, you know, and you pick one. Some of the kids wound up with wonderful homes. Some of them wound up in dreadful places.
Carmela was very lucky. She had a great home. She went on to become a teacher, raised her family in Tinta, and had a great life. And like you said, not everybody was so lucky.
We're glad for her, for sure.
Yes.
More towns, more stories, please. Dean, Jill, what do you have for us in this wonderful book of yours?
Well, Dean, maybe I'll talk about the cover.
We'll talk about Neillsville.
Okay.
And Neillsville was a critical area in the Ojibwe and Dakota history of Minnesota.
Where's it located, Dean?
It's located right along the Red River between Moorhead and East Grand Forks.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
And the Dakota occupied Minnesota before the 1700s, and then the Ojibwe were gradually pushed in by struggles to the east.
Mm-hmm.
And they fought a battle in 1819 in Little River, which is actually the Goose River. And at that time, there was a Dakota war party heading north and an Ojibwe party heading south.
Mm-hmm.
They met each other unexpectedly, and they had such a horrendous battle, they both felt they had lost, and after a day, they both fled in opposite directions.
Right.
And it's unlike our battles, which go on for 10 years. Mm-hmm. These people had to survive. They they weren't dumb enough to fight very long. And that actually decided the boundary of the 1825 Treaty of Prairie du Chien. Left the Ojibwe in control of the rice beds in northern Minnesota, and the Dakota were to the south and west.
Let's, if we can, sally forth to
Seaforth,
Minnesota, that in the southwestern corner of the state again. And this has several interesting stories, and one of which has to do with polka masses and BYOC. Tell us about this in Seaforth.
Well, every year for many years, Seaforth has hosted a polka fest. And so everybody in the area heads to Seaforth to dance the polka, and it's really their claim to fame. And yes, you are to BYOC, bring your own chair. Like so many of the little Minnesota towns, people love to dance and they love music. And no matter how tiny the town, they would all have a great band, a great cornet band.
Right.
They would often have a choir. They'd have like Hazel Run had the Fiddle Footers, where they had a dance club.
You don't mean the Fiddle Footers.
The Fiddle Footers. They all had music. And I think of one little town, Borup, where they had a big band. Half the band members were from the farms, half were from town. And they played before every baseball game, which was a real trick for these boys because most of them played baseball too. So they'd have to rush out of their band uniform and get into their baseball uniform.
Well, okay, the polka capital right there in Seaforth, Minnesota. And what else do we have here? Let's talk about Squaw Lake, Minnesota. The holiday season, something very special happens here in this north central or northeastern Minnesota town. Population, what is it? A little over 100.
Right.
A lot of people of Finnish ancestry there. Something on Christmas Eve, I think, happens.
Yeah.
It's absolutely delightful.
It's an interesting town because half the people in the community are of Finnish descent and half are Native American. And every Christmas Eve, it's a Finnish tradition for the people to put ice candles on the graves of their loved ones.
Ice candles. Okay, they're candles.
It's a candle made out of ice, and you just put a little candle in the center. They light them, and it's a beautiful thing to behold on Christmas
Eve. In the cemeteries,
in
right?
The
at
cemeteries.
Each grave site, do they?
Yes.
It's a tradition that's carried on in Norway even today.
Oh, my. Well, that's beautiful. There are so many aspects to small-town America and certainly small-town Minnesota. You capture so much of it in your wonderful book here.
Okay.
We're running low on time. Go ahead and hit a couple others if you'd like.
I'm thinking of Minnieska, which is
the cover girl, the cover story.
It's
a beautiful, Dean, your wonderful photograph of Minnieska. I've gone by this place so many times on Highway 61 going down southeastern Minnesota way.
It's a photogenic spot. You can't miss it.
And
I took a nice overexposed backlit photo of this place, and the publisher said, "This is a beautiful place, but we need to retake this
photo."
Go
back and do it over.
Yeah, I was there evening before and the morning after.
It's a beautiful shot, Dean. You've got a train that's on the rails rolling to the left here of Highway 61.
We scheduled that train in just in time for my last shot.
And beautiful.
They put it on the cover.
So what about, tell us a bit about Minnieska, okay?
Minnieska is interesting in that it was almost wiped off the map in 1960 when they converted Highway 61 into a four-lane highway. You know, they lost a lot of businesses, a lot of homes, several, a church, a school, And so it's amazing that that town has recovered and gone on to be the wonderful city it is today. One of the biggest surprises for us in Minnesota was to find two world-class carvers on Main Street, side by side. Harvey Langseth carves wonderful Norwegian furniture, and right next door, Todd Paschke carves merry-go-round carousels.
My goodness.
Something you would not expect to find.
Next time I need a merry-go-round figure, I know where I'm heading.
You know where to go.
About it. Well, in the waning moments of the show here, okay, we got to find out, Dean and Jill, what are your favorite, one or two, your favorite small Minnesota towns? Which ones grab you the most by the heart?
I think Wayland grabs me because we enjoyed our bike ride in there and had such nice pie. People were so gracious in welcoming us and having us back for the parade, which was such a blast.
And they used to grow tobacco down there, too.
Yeah.
And, Jill, what about your favorites?
I think I loved Wayland, too, but I really enjoyed Regal, Minnesota, which is by Painesville.
Sounds so royal.
Oh, it does. But, you know, that's another town where it's funny the way they chose the name. The postmaster had a Ford, and so he wanted the town to be named Ford. Well, a farmer had a Regal, and he wanted to be named Regal, and so they couldn't agree, so they threw in the Harvard, and they sent the three names down to Minneapolis, and the post office there chose Regal.
We must ask you here in the final seconds, what about the future of small town Minnesota? The post offices are going away one after another. People are moving out, although some of the latest census shows some of them are coming back, or at least new people are coming in. What is the bottom line to real small town Minnesota? Are we in danger of losing a lot of these lovely places, or are we going to have them for a while?
In speaking with the mayors, there was only one who said that he did not think the town would be around for the next census. The biggest problem is that the councils are aging, and they can't get young people in to fill their places. But little Minnesota people are so proud of their towns. They have great pride in their towns, and that's evidenced by their beautiful churches, their century farms. You know, they hang on to their culture, and I'm hopeful that they will be around for the next census.
Dean Johnson, you think pride, certainly pride, can help keep them afloat?
I think pride and connections. These little towns are like a neighborhood, and everybody loves the quiet life. Sometimes they can commute to get work and come back to their little town, and they just love living there.
I would imagine a lot of people who retire in Minneapolis, St. Paul area, they just get the heck out of town here, sell off what they don't need, and go up there and find a nice small town and just kind of kick back and enjoy it.
I think some people would enjoy that.
Jill and Dean, I am hoping you got another book or two in the works. Tell us what's going on there.
Well, as I was researching for Little Minnesota, I was astounded to discover all the men who died in war from Little Minnesota, a very disproportionate number from the smallest towns. So my next book will be a book about the 165 men who died in World War II from Little Minnesota.
And Dean, do you have a book already?
I have a book that just came out, published by Adventure. It's called The Best of Itasca. It's a guide to Minnesota's oldest state park, and includes a hiking trail guide, 70 pages of history, natural history, and driving guides, skiing, recommendations.
The source of the mighty Mississippi.
The source of the Mississippi.
Okay. Yeah. Your publisher. We have to give them a shout out here. Wonderful.
Adventure Publications from Cambridge. Do a great job.
And you know what? We can find your book and books, Little Minnesota, a nostalgic look at Minnesota's smallest towns. I've been to several bookstores around the metro. It's in every one of them. It's your beautiful cover shot, Dean, is there. Your wonderful text and stories.
Thank you,
Sam. You guys have rendered a wonderful service to Minnesota, big and small and everything in between. Thank you so much. And folks, have a good time. Good luck finding a place to stay tonight.
Thank you.
It's hard to get a room here. So many people on the move, right?
Yeah, that's right.
All right. Thank you so much. Everybody have a great weekend. Okay, the clouds will go away. We're going to have great summer weather going. We'll see you Monday right after the news at noon for the All Request and Dedication Program. Lots of music coming your way. Sam Turner here. Thank you so much. Bye-bye.